Welcome back to this short course on dreams, a way to listen to God. As I said in the previous very short introduction, dreams are one way that God speaks to us. And in fact, you can't understand the Bible without approaching the subject of dreams. There is, in the Old Testament and New Testament, plenty of evidence that this is how God would communicate with people. And so we're going to begin by looking at some of the Old Testament passages that are dreams that people had and what God was trying to communicate through them. So let's start. Dreams in the Old Testament. First dream we're going to look at here is in Genesis 15. I'm sorry for the small print here, but I didn't want to have many, many slides to cover these things. So I'm going to do something that, you know, when I teach, I'm preaching, and some of you have taken my preaching course. One of the things I say not to do is just read what's on the screen. But for the sake of making sure we get all the points, let's look at it. This Genesis 15 comes as Abraham and God are beginning a relationship. It starts in Genesis chapter 12, where God comes to Abram and encourages him to leave his land. And so Abraham is a very important character in the Old Testament, right? And yet, here we have a powerful statement. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep. Take note of that. And a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, "Know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and that they will be enslaved and mistreated there. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterwards they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your ancestors in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure." When the sun had set and the darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. Now, the pieces here are the animals that Abraham cut and separated, so there was a path between them. And so here comes the smoking fire pot and goes before them. "On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land, from the Wadi of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, Kenizzites, Cadmonites, Hittites, Perizzites, Rephaites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and Jebusites.'" Now, of course, this comes in a context, and the context is simply that idea of God making a covenant with Abraham. Now, in the covenant, usually, there was some ceremony that would happen. You know, in some cases in Scripture, it's exchanging a sandal. But many of them had to do with death and bloodshedding. And so Abraham, at the direction of God, cuts these animals in two and separates them. And the idea then would be that the two people who are part of the covenant, if it was a human covenant, would walk through this. And the implication is, if you break this covenant, this will be the result: death and bloodshed. Now, in this dream, God comes and gives Abraham a sense of the future. He's still called Abram here, you notice. But a sense of the future. What is the future going to be like? And he hears this prediction that goes ahead hundreds of years. And Abram now knows that he's part of the flow of God throughout history. And he understands something of his role in that flow of history. And then there's that picture of the fire pot going between the two parts, which is a representation that God is going to keep both sides of the covenant. He's the only one who goes through there. Now, just picture what this might have meant to Abraham as a, you know, he's wondering. He's met this God in Genesis chapter 12, and God has told him to leave his land. He's gone. He's in Haran at this point, where his father dies, and he's wondering, where is God? God didn't speak to him very often, but when he did, it was powerful, sometimes face to face. So he's wondering, and now God comes and affirms to him the fact that he is a special person in the plan of history, and he's got a special role to play. Now, that's a powerful, powerful kind of statement, don't you think? Now, imagine if Abraham had gotten up after he's fallen into this deep sleep and he woke up and said, "Whoa, I shouldn't have had that pepperoni pizza last night. So often we attribute our dreams simply to bad food or stress or whatever. But sometimes there are dreams like this where God affirms our role in his plan for the kingdom. So that's the first passage that we're looking at today. Here's the next one. This comes a little later in Genesis, and it's Jacob's dream at Bethel. Now, just some background to this passage. You remember that Jacob has cheated his brother Esau out of the birthright. And in fact, he tricks his father. Remember, he fixed a special meal for his father, even though his father has asked his brother Esau to do that. And so Jacob is a deceiver, deceives his father, and he gets the birthright. In other words, he gets the right of the firstborn son to be the representative of God's covenant with mankind. And then after he steals this birthright and gets the blessing of his father to be the one who is the firstborn, the one in covenant relationship with God, his brother Esau says he's going to kill him, and so Jacob runs away. And so Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. Now that's where the relatives of Abraham lived. That was a long stop on Abraham's trip to the Promised Land. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Wow, what a thing. Here, Jacob is running. He's afraid for his life. He knows that he has cheated his brother out of something significant. To get the birthright meant, in that society, was that you got double the possessions of any other family member. You know, the other family members, the first son would get half of the father's possessions, and any other sons would get the rest. Divided among themselves. And so Jacob here gets that birthright, but now it doesn't mean anything because he's scared. His brother is out to kill him. And he's wondering, what in the world does this birthright mean? And in fact, it's a fascinating thing. There's a change in Jacob from this day. Before this, when he goes into his father, he talks about your God to Isaac. But after this event, he talks about my God, my God. Anyway, he's running. And he falls asleep and he gets this dream. And in this dream, God affirms the covenant that he made with Abram and continued through Isaac, affirms it for Jacob. And it's a covenant that's going to result in blessing for him, and it's going to result in a lot of blessing for other people as well. And, you know, again, one thing, if Jacob had thought, whoa, that was really weird, and just went on his life, but he went on with confidence because he knew God's promise. You know, I will not leave you until I've done what I promised you. And his result is, surely God is in this place. And later he comes back and builds an altar and sacrifices to God. Wow, what a difference a dream meant for him. Let's go on to the next dream. In Genesis chapter 40, you remember there's a whole set of dreams, and they are Joseph's dreams, and they're lengthy, and so I didn't just put the scripture passages on there, the Genesis 8. But in there is the story of Joseph. Now, Joseph's whole story is full of dreams. You remember it started with him having dreams as one of the youngest children, and all his brothers, stars, were bowing down to him, and all the brothers, sheaves of wheat, were bowing down to him, and his brothers were taking deep, deep offense at this. But the story starts with that dream. Jacob was not a smart guy. He showed favoritism to Joseph, the first son of his beloved wife, Rachel, and so the brothers just are so upset with him. And so one day Joseph is sent out to find out where his brothers are grazing the sheep, and he finds them, and they see him coming, and they say, let's get rid of him, let's kill him. And then they take him, they rip this special coat, the coat of many colors, off that Jacob had given him as an emblem of his specialness in the family, ripped it off him, threw him in a dry well pit, and then planned to kill him. And then as Ishmaelite slave traders were coming by, I said, look, let's get some money out of it, at least. And they sold their brother. Jacob, you remember, goes down to Egypt, and as a slave, he is sold to Potiphar. Imagine the change in his life. Now he's gone from favored son down to a slave. He prospers in Potiphar's house. He's blessed by God. In fact, the scripture phrase that comes off often in those verses is, the Lord, because the Lord was with him. Thriving in Potiphar's house, and then Potiphar's wife accuses him of attempted rape, and so he's thrown into prison. And there he continues to thrive because we're told again the Lord was with him. And one of the things that Joseph has is an ability to interpret dreams. Now, in that society, dreams were considered very important. And by the way, they still are today. My wife and I support a missionary, a young woman, who works among Muslims. That's her goal, and right now she's in Spain dealing with immigrant Muslims. But she tells us when she visits that God is still speaking through dreams. How do Muslims come to faith? Very, very often it's because they've had a dream of Jesus. Jesus speaking to them. Jesus calling to them. Jesus inviting them. And they'll go to our friend and say, what does this mean? And she helps interpret the dream that Jesus is speaking to them. Anyway, so in that society, dreams were important. Well, Joseph is in prison. The baker and the cupbearer of Pharaoh, the king, are thrown into prison, and that's where he is. He's stuck in prison. And so he hears that these two have had dreams, and he interprets those dreams for them. And you remember the dream of the cupbearer is that he's going to be treading grapes, and he's going to once again serve wine to the Pharaoh. He's going to be restored to his position, and it's going to be in just a short time. And so the baker is getting this great excitement about, okay, maybe I'm going to be restored too. But his dream is different. He's carrying loaves of bread in a basket on his head, and birds come and eat it and take it. A lot of symbolism there. The symbolism of bread, the symbolism of the birds coming, the symbolism of the devastation. And the interpretation of that dream is, you're going to die. Interpretation. And that resulted in the cupbearer being restored and forgetting about Joseph for a lengthy period of time. And then finally, Pharaoh has a dream, the king. And you remember the dream. It's a dream of, you know, these seven lean cows come up and fat cows come up out of the Nile River. And the skinny cows just eat up the fat cows, and then it was with sheaves of grain and that sort of thing. And nobody can interpret the dream. Pharaoh has a sense, this is important. I've got to know what this is. And so finally Joseph is called, and he interprets the dream, saying there's going to be 7 years of just wonderful harvests, and then there's going to be 7 years of starvation and famine. And so he suggests to Pharaoh a plan. You know, during these 7 years, make sure you store up a lot of grain, a lot of food, so that you'll be able to deal with the 7 years after that. And Pharaoh points him the second highest authority in the land. Now, again, an important dream. It's a foretelling dream. In other words, it's telling what's coming in the future. And it was the means by which God ended up with Joseph in this incredibly important position. And through that, his early dreams are fulfilled as his brothers come and bow down to him. And so a powerful, powerful chapter of dreams that tell us that God was informing people about what was to come. These are forth-telling dreams. And they are involving symbolism. They're involving words of direction on what should be, as well as just the picture for Joseph of his brothers bowing down to him that becomes true. And must have, when they finally came and actually were bowing for him, must have been, oh, I remember that one. I remember those dreams, and here it's coming true. So this is just the beginning of the Old Testament review of dreams, and we're going to continue in the next section. So I invite you to come back then.